Welcome to the 15th episode of the Reckless Dice Podcast, where we discuss Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay 3rd Edition. I'm the co-founder of Reckless Dice and your host, Jesse Gitzman Burke. With me tonight are Lester Crowe and his strolling bones, along with our special guest, Rickard the Mountain. Welcome, you guys.
Hello. Thanks for having
me. And Rickard, you're actually joining us from quite a ways away. Where are you from?
Well, I hail from Norway. Or Norska, if you use the Warhammer universe.
Excellent. So actually, we got Canada, we've got Norway, and now we've got the west coast of America. So we're going to kick it right off with the news this week. It's been a pretty busy last 2 weeks, and I'd say most of the action has happened actually in the last probably 3 or 4 days. Late last week, Blackfyre Pass was released, the dwarf supplement that we've all been waiting for. Almost immediately following that, the new Slaaneshi supplement was announced. And so, Lester, you actually tipped me off when the news release first came out. You want to cover a little bit of what the announcement for the Slaanesh supplement, what it's going to cover, or what we know so far?
Yeah, sure. As far as I know, it's going to be called Lure of Power, and the box art, as per usual, is fantastic. Little demonette on the back and a noble, but I mean, pretty much it says that it's going to be basically what we've been speculating here. It's all about nobles and their kind of existence within the old world.
And are there halflings?
It hasn't said yet, but I'm still anticipating one of the, you know, they usually give 3 announcements before. I have a feeling they're going to announce that the halflings will be in this.
Oh, you think they'll still be in it?
I do think that there will be at least a page detailing how to play as a halfling character in this setting.
Oh, interesting. I was kind of signing off the fact that they were resigned to the fact that they were not going to be in release at all.
I just think that because nobles employ them to cook their food, and because people have been asking for it so much, and this is kind of closing out a cycle of products. It's closing out the main chaos supplements. Mm-hmm. I would just assume that. That they're going to come out. If they don't come out here, then they're going to come out with what we were talking about when I said that they're probably going to release the guides part 2. I have a feeling they might come in that if they're not in this. But one of the really interesting things that I've noticed about it is that it talks about here, it's called verbal sparring is what the section's called. And they say that they've developed new rules for social encounters to make them more engaging and to actually make them like a game as opposed to more abstract, the way that...
And they haven't really... This first article that they released was really just a teaser to say, yes, it's coming, mm-hmm. and here's the highest level of detail. They didn't really get into anything except that they did, like Lester said, mention this kind of social engagement being... I'm not sure if they said revamped or really expanded, but do you think it's just going to involve like more tracking tokens, or do you think it's going to be something a little more beyond that?
I don't know. It says here that I can't remember what it says exactly, but it talks about how there's rich new mechanics for social encounters to make them every bit as engaging and important as combat. You can find that on the Fantasy Flight main website. But the only other thing they really announced with that is that the chaos portion of the book was going to be called Liber Ecstatica.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks really good. I'm super excited.
And similar to all the other Chaos supplements, there'll be an adventure, there'll be the mm-hmm. Chaos God, the Chaos Demons, and then expanding upon mm-hmm. the social noble class.
And it will come with cards for all your creatures and everything to supplement the creature's vault and stuff like that. So
then ostensibly we're going to be seeing some Tier 2 or Tier 3 human social careers.
Yes, for sure, and halflings. But that's still speculation at this point. What do you think about this, Rickard?
Well, I'm very intrigued about the idea of new social rules. That's what we need because I have never rolled what we call social initiative. I never used those rules so far in my games. Have you?
No, personally. Have you, Jesse?
I've used it once, but it wasn't really out of necessity. It was more out of trying to use it because I feel like I'm supposed to.
Yeah,
so not really.
Yeah, so it would be great to have new examples and new ways of using those rules, social rules, because they've been lacking, I think, so far. I've been very unsure how to use them. I'm very excited about this product.
I'm a little cautious. I hear them saying they'll make it new and exciting. I just can't really envision a way that it's going to happen. But, you know, they've surprised me with a couple of the creative ways to approach some problems before. So I'll remain optimistic, but at the same time, I'm still cautious too.
Yeah, I hope they also detail a few of the noble lines to give you an idea of its structure so that you can create your own, or, you know, at least know some of the major ones.
Yeah. So the next bit of news that's kind of big is we're all anticipating Gen Con being the new release of the Sifting Through the Shadows 2.0 document, essentially outlining what is coming up over the next year regarding releases. Everyone was kind of speculating we'd see it at Gen Con because that's when last year's document came out. Gen Con has come and gone as far as the Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay seminar is concerned. That actually happened this afternoon. It was a half-hour seminar, and actually one of our Twitter followers and podcast contributors, Skippin, was able to give us a pretty close to live breakdown of the content as they were giving it. And it was a bit disappointing. There was not a lot of content, if anything, actually released. They again announced the Slaanesh supplement, and they covered a bit of some of the recent products like Blackfyre Pass and Omens of War. But the rest of the talk was really just around marketing tactics for the initial launch of Warhammer Roleplay. Nothing new beyond Slaanesh had been talked about.
Do you think that they're holding off to release an actual PDF document similar to Sifting Through the Shadows?
That'd be my hope, but the forums are really depressing right now. People are singing doom and gloom that they're kind of, now that they're talking about maybe that Fantasy Flight is, now that they're completing the four chaos pieces, they're talking that maybe they'll just kind of shelve it for a while and pull back on the release schedule a bit.
Possibly. I still think their role-playing games are coming along pretty good. They have lots of releases announced for the 40K supplements, so possibly they're shifting their finances to that. And they announced the Star Wars role-playing game and card game and all that, so mm-hmm. who knows? I mean, hopefully this isn't the death knell for this game, because it's great, but I mean, there's so much to cover still.
If a death knell were to happen, or at least a slowing down of product, this would probably be when it would happen,
mm-hmm.
after Slaanesh. However, I don't think it's going to be a death knell, my own personal opinion. I think likely it's going to be a slowdown in product. Mm-hmm. I don't think we'll see them maybe quite as much. I'm guessing we may not see a 12-month lead out of upcoming product. I'm thinking we're probably going to, you know, as Slaanesh draws closer, maybe they'll tease the one following it and kind of keep that kind of pattern going.
Yeah, that makes sense.
What do you think, Rickarden?
Yeah, it makes sense what you're saying. I too also think that what's up with what they're talking about on the internet, on the forums, about this is the doom of the game. It's not. It's just, like you said, slowing down. And that would be preferable, I think, because my wallet can't take it anymore.
Fair enough. Well, Ricard, you're involved in Liber Fanatica, and that's actually a really good supplementary avenue, I guess, if you want to add to your games of Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay. There's lots of really good information through that. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I can talk about that. When it comes to Liber Fanatica, it's a fan-made magazine online, right? And
yep.
I've been involved in the last two issues, Liber Fanatica 7 and 8, and I'm currently invested in the new edition, issue number 9, which will be a Game Master team issue.
Sweet.
So I can tell about the Liber Fanatica 8.
which from what I understand, that's coming going live in the next day or so, isn't it?
Yeah,
I saw Sean Connor's post on the forums that he was kind of like, everybody stay tuned.
Yeah, that's my understanding. It will be released very soon, if not within 24 hours, at least before the weekend. So I have been participating in an article about the law of the Empire in Libertatica's 8. It's about the criminal aspect of the Empire, which we have been focusing on in this issue. Mm. And I wrote counter aspect of that, which deals with the law of the Empire. Because if you're going to have the criminal aspect of the Empire, you also need the law of the Empire.
Yeah.
They come close in a hand, you know.
Yeah, it's good to know, like, what kind of laws you break create criminals, you know.
Yeah, it's my article is about 70 pages long, including art. It's about how to deal with breaking the law. And it's a bit about the history of the law in the Empire. It's sort of, I'm going to call it a catch-all phrase. It contains a lot of the information, but I'm only scratching the surface.
Mm-hmm.
Deal with a lot of things in this article. So it's, yeah.
Excellent.
I got it from Jesse, who has to do with the art.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And he made it stunningly. That guy is really talented, I tell you that. He's probably the best layout I've seen in years when it comes to a fan magazine. It looks very professional.
Are we talking about UC?
Yeah, you see.
Yeah, he is fantastic.
Yeah, you know him a bit, right?
Yeah, I was talking to him. I've slowed down a lot on it, but I've been attempting to produce an apocrypha called Travel and Its Perils to go on the Liber Fanatica site, and he was involved in that, and I am going to get him more involved once I have more of a completed product, because he's a fantastic artist. I tried to get him to come on to the show tonight, but he's really busy. He's a teacher, like he's a university professor in Finland, so he's probably on vacation right now or something like that. But I couldn't get a hold of him.
Yeah, last I heard from him, he was on vacation in Sweden.
Ooh.
And probably be back very soon. He was talking about a week in Sweden.
Yeah, I'd like to get a hold of him. I'd like to do a little bit of an interview with him too. He is a fantastic artist.
I saw a couple teaser pages that somebody was showing me as they were working on it, and I'm assuming that he had kind of helped lay out the graphics for it, because everything looked like it was coming straight out of a Fantasy Flight production.
Yeah,
I mean, it would really, really look sharp. Like you could print it and put it in your binders of books, and it'd fit right in.
Yeah, he's great. I mean,
I was impressed.
Liber Fanatica is getting better and better. It's going to be excellent. I'm looking forward to 9 as well, but I really want to dig into 8. I know a little bit about what was going on. I did a little bit of proofreading and stuff on that, and some consulting, I guess. But it was unfortunate that I ended up dropping out Travel in Its Perils, but it also didn't really fit the theme of the magazine very well. So, and it's more ambitious. I think it would work better as an apocrypha. But yeah, I'm really excited for Liber Fanatica.
Cool. Well, have you guys been getting any gaming in over the last few weeks?
Personally, no. What about you, Ricard?
No, we are taking a break from Warhammer, and we are currently playing some other role-playing games, like Pathfinder. So, no, it's been a break. We plan starting up the first around September. So we take a break from the game.
Yeah.
Well, I've been getting all sorts of gaming on.
Lucky Jesse.
Yeah, I started a campaign with some folks, some local folks here in Sacramento, actually yesterday evening, and we started playing the Journey to Blackfyre Pass.
Nice.
So we're playing through that in the hopes of beginning the Blackfyre Pass supplement, which just came out. And then also about a week and a half or so ago, I played another local campaign, which we're actually going to have up on the show in a little, maybe over the next week or so, which is a little bit of an M-rated episode, but it maybe it deals with some more explicit content. Maybe for any of the younger listeners or for anybody who's a little sensitive may not be as appropriate. It's not super hardcore or anything. It just kind of deals with some sensitive issues. And then this weekend, Lester and I were playing in a game testing out the second round of Fantasy Grounds 2 using the Warhammer Fantasy rule set. So we're going to have some serious action up soon.
Yeah, I'm extremely excited for Saturday.
Cool. Well, the rest of the show, we're going to be discussing Blackfire Pass, the new product, go over the contents and what we all think. And we're also going to go over some of the new rules that were introduced with the new Blackfire Pass. And then we'll probably close it out with a little bit of Q&A. But largely a lot of that is all the Q&A that's going on right now is all about where is our 2.0 sifting through shadows. So that might be a light section tonight. And after the break, we'll be right back. And we're back. So we're going to be discussing the Blackfire Pass supplement, which is the first racial-specific supplement released for Warhammer 3rd Edition. What was the Skaven supplement?
Children of the Horned Rat is what it was called.
That was the 2nd Edition one. What was the one that came out recently, where we did the Masquerade Ball and the Skaven?
Oh, Edge of Night.
Edge of Night. So this is very similar to an Edge of Night sized release. It's a bit smaller than the Chaos God packs that like Omens of War or the new Slaanesh supplement. This one focuses specifically on the dwarves, dwarven culture, dwarven history, and also provides a very dwarf-centric adventure, which does not necessarily have to be. You don't have to be dwarves to participate in it, but it definitely encourages interaction within dwarven cultures and where the dwarves actually live beyond just Kerak Asgaraz, which is the dwarven hold right near the Reichland that Warhammer has up until this point largely focused on. And additionally, it does give quite a bit of new content for some orc action. You get some new night goblins, some new shamans, some squigs, some cool stuff like that. And lastly, it introduces two new rules mechanics, maybe even two and a half, depending on how you want to think about it. But you get runesmithing and rules for dwarven inventions. And that little half point I was mentioning there is it also provides some rules for forging your own weapons and armor. And that kind of ties a bit into the runesmithing rules.
Nice. Sounds awesome.
So you get two books, just like any other supplement that's been released to date. The first one, it's called The Book of Grudges. And The Book of Grudges, kind of like I said a moment ago, largely covers dwarven history, everything kind of predating man up until current day. It talks about Kerak Asgaraz. Again, that's the dwarven hold in the Grey Mountains. A lot of younger dwarves who have been kind of the refugees of dwarven holds throughout the old world that have fallen. Many of those dwarves have kind of come here and started up a newer hold. It's not as deep, but it's still this massive fortress compared to any human engineering. But it doesn't quite have the clout that some of the older holds have throughout the old world. So they're often all the dwarves there are often a little more adventurous or a little more outgoing, trying to prove themselves and show everybody else that they are worthy of the name. It also covers grudges, which is a huge part of dwarven culture. Lester, do you want to get in a bit about what grudges are all about? Because they're just kind of fun.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. I guess a dwarf will never forget a slight. So they note these down in books and they carry them on for generations and generations and generations. All I really know, detail-wise about grudges, I bought that dwarves book. That's a compilation of, Gav Thorpe novels, and then at the very end it talks about like a detailed list of a whole bunch of different grudges that they hold in the world. And
so this book actually covers some of those. It covers some of the biggest grudges against the dwarves, you know, whether it's from the night goblins, the goblins, the orcs, the skaven, the humans, the elves. It kind of catalogs some of the biggest ones, which maybe help you create some story arcs or give some of your adventures or NPCs a little bit of attitude or meaning.
Mm-hmm.
Then the other part it also introduces in this book is the two new rule sections for dwarven engineering and which is the inventions and then runesmithing. And we'll get that into that in our next section. But otherwise that's kind of your more or less your lore book. The good guy book, kind of as they seem to do it. The bad guy book, or in the adventure book, is called Blackfire Pass, and that has the history of Blackfire Pass, geography, and a little bit of a map that provides some context as to where things are. Though I found the map a little bit confusing to really make a whole lot of sense of. I would. Oh yeah. I'm looking at the map like, cool. How do I incorporate this into the big map? And I just didn't find really anything useful to do with it. Yeah, and it's not in a card format like we've been seeing to date. This map is just printed as a full page in the book.
Okay. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool. It just...
I don't know how I feel really about all the different little handout... the sheet size, the like Polaroid-sized sheets. I mean, mm-hmm. It's pretty interesting, but I'd rather just make those handouts myself, like the notes and the maps and stuff like that.
I kind of like something I can write on.
Yeah.
Write my notes and stuff. It also provides a great series of adventure seeds of just kind of like, almost, they can either be adventure seeds or even little mini encounters within Blackfire Pass. Just a lot of kind of dwarven or orc or greenskin themed mini adventures. And there's about 10 of them, and I've read about 9 of them so far, and they're all pretty decent and fun. And then lastly, the second half of the book goes into the main adventure provided, which is Harrower of Thanes. And that one is an adventure that's going to take you all the way from Karak Asgaraz to the Blackfire Pass in order to return a rune-etched hammer to its rightful holding place. But there's a whole lot that goes on within that adventure that's going to cause you guys a world of problems. So I'm not going to get into too many details of what it's about, but... do you guys find it a little confusing that the Blackfire Pass supplement takes you from Karak Asgaraz to the Blackfire Pass? What was the whole point of Journey to Blackfire Pass then?
I guess it's like just like an intro adventure, I guess. I don't know. Like, wasn't that the demo? Wasn't that the demo adventure?
Yeah, but it kind of made me think that this would just kind of pick up in Blackfire Pass. I don't know. I just... It caught me a little off guard when all of a sudden, like, I'm playing Blackfire Pass to play this adventure, the Journey to Blackfire Pass in order to play this adventure, and I begin reading the adventure, and it begins back in Karak Asgaraz. So now I have to kind of reformat it a bit.
Well, you could work in the journey into your journey, kind of.
Yeah, I'm going to have to kind of backpedal a little and figure that one out.
Or have NPCs that are delivering the hammer, and your party runs into them, or whatever. But anyway, that's for another time, that discussion.
So what other stuff were you guys looking forward to seeing in the Blackfire Pass box?
Well, my question is, is there a Karak in the Blackfire Pass? Is there a dwarven portrait of some kind there?
From what I understand, there is a... I'm unclear where it's located right now, but Karak Azul is supposed to be close to it, if not in it. And in the Journey to Blackfire Pass, that is the destination of the dwarves carrying the shield. So their journey takes them from Karak Asgaraz down the old dwarf road into Grenstadt and then into Blackfire Pass. And from there, they're trying to journey to Karak Azul. So Karak Azul in my mental map is either in or on the far edge of Blackfire Pass, or maybe you just have to leave the pass completely and go to it. But maybe one of our listeners can help us out on that one. But Karak Azul is going to be one of your closest ones.
Okay, that's really interesting. Another question is, does this product have any information about other parts of the empire?
It does not, that I'm aware of. I haven't read the whole adventure. It is going to give you a lot of information on the as well as the free one, the journey, give you quite a bit of information on Hydek and Grenstadt, which are two major towns on the old dwarf road, which is the large kind of dwarven highway that takes you from Averheim to the old to the Blackfyre Pass. So you do kind of get a nice history and architecture and purpose for these two cities, particularly Grenstadt, which has a really neat kind of setting because it's the last human settlement before the Blackfyre Pass. So you get this kind of huge melding of dwarven and human culture there. It's also this just fortified city that is kind of a big plug to stop anything from coming into the empire. So you've got the armies of Averland there. You've got lots of dwarves. You've got dwarven culture, trading. Lots of people trying to make a profit as people move in and out and travel between the Empire, Blackfyre Pass, and the Border Princes beyond.
Nice.
I must tell you, I like what I'm hearing because nothing much have been detailed about the provinces close to the Wall Edge Mountains before, like Averland, the old. Mm-hmm. Dwarf Road, as we were speaking about. Mm-hmm. This is something new, completely new for the Warhammer. This is new lore.
How interesting.
That's what I'm going to say. This is new lore.
Well, it's actually, they cover it nicely. They don't get into too much detail where it's like overburdened, but they give it to you in a nice high-level fashion that's easy to understand and digest and make it usable. So I have a really clear picture now, especially after running the journey or the first part of the journey to Blackfyre Pass, of kind of what everything looks like from basically Middle Empire until you hit Blackfyre Pass. And that part in my mental mind has really kind of flowered out a bit. So it's been nice. The other cool thing we haven't really talked about yet that came in the box is the 10 new careers, which are all, I'd say about, I think 8 of them are dwarf specific. I think 1 or 2 of them can also be used by a human, but I may not be remembering that correctly. But either way, they're all very, very dwarf themed. Things like thanes, runesmiths, lore keepers, several tier 2 and tier 3 careers for some of the warrior classes. The artwork on them is all fantastic. The tokens on them are super cool. So that should be a lot of fun. My new dwarf character is really looking forward to playing with some of those.
Oh, that sounds super cool. And I also heard that the Dragon Slayer is among those.
The Dragon Slayer is among them, yes. And a cool picture where he's actually holding the head of a dragon. It's neat.
That is awesome.
And you also get, of the punch-outs, you're going to get a Night Goblin Shaman. A few of his specific Night Goblin henchmen with some new art. You're going to have there's 10 or 12 dwarves. There's the ones that correspond to the character sheets, and I think there's 1 or 2 from the NPCs or from the adventure, and a human or two as well. And then lastly, you get a special character, Dragon Ogre Shaggoth, which is pretty neat looking as well. I won't go into any details on that right now. And then you get a bunch of tokens. You're going to get a bunch of new chits that correspond to some of the new rules for the rune forging and the inventions. And otherwise, it's pretty light on. It's just one sheet of cardboard punch-outs.
Oh, cool. Very interesting.
You also, I think you even get some of the drunken. You finally get the drunken condition card. So you can actually have a bunch of dwarf beer now.
So that's different than the intoxicated one, then?
Supposedly.
Crazy.
Maybe it's a drunk on dwarf.
Which is very hard to attain.
Ricard, were you about to say something there?
Yeah, I was just wondering about the rules. How do you think the rules work.
Well, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we will we'll talk about runesmithing and the new invention rules.
Sounds nice.
All right, we're back. So we're first going to talk about runesmithing, the first of the two new rule sections introduced with the Blackfyre Pass, the second of which being the inventions. Runesmithing and runes in general are a really important aspect to dwarves and their culture. And since dwarves don't use magic in any capacity, the kind of magic they do use, if you can even call it magic, is through the use of runes, which are these etchings and engravings that they put into stones, armor, talismans, and weapons to imbue them with kind of a magical force. I'm not really sure. Do either of you guys know what that force is? Is it magic? Just they just don't use it in the form of spell casting?
As far as I know, it is magic, but it's like a really specialized version of magic.
Okay, because these runes are engraved and etched by a runesmith, which is essentially the equivalent of a dwarven priest or mage. And they do it on an anvil, and it's a big old production. And dwarves take such immense pride in their work for crafting these items that there are even a whole set of rules on how the items are created and in what capacity new ones can be created, because a dwarf takes such pride that he'll never make the same thing twice. Once he's made it, he wouldn't do anything less than perfecting it the first time, so he'll never go back and do that same thing again because he's already done it and mastered it. So what that means is if you're going to make like a rune axe that gives you a bonus to your damage, you could never in your character's life make that same axe again. You can make something more powerful. You can make something different. You can make that same axe in order to, in the future, add more runes to it. But you can never kind of mass produce the same thing and start handing them out to your friends. So there, to kind of go along with that, there are three rules that are part of runesmithing. Now, you know what? I'm going to backtrack a quick second and talk about how the actual rule mechanic works. There are new cards provided, and they are the size of the talent cards. And these runes have a symbol on them, and things like, you know, might, strength, dexterity. And what they do is those runes attach to items that you own. So that could be, you know, a sword, a piece of armor, a talisman. And that card then imbues that with some kind of a beneficial effect. So, for example, in the book here, the Rune of Might adds the following. It can only be attached to a weapon, and attacks made with that weapon gain, if you roll two boons, you get +3 damage. And a lot of these runes are pretty strong. They are quite considerable, especially if you're thinking about combining them with an action card. A rune forged weapon, armor, or talisman is the equivalent of a pretty serious magical weapon, and a rune item can have up to 3 runes on it. It can never have more than 3. Now, a level 1 runesmith can etch up to 1 rune on an item. A rank 2 runesmith can do 2. Now, the third rune, that is really at the GM's discretion at that point. That's considered a 3-rune item is a legendary item that is, you know, the chances of you seeing one or being able to forge one are pretty remote. So GM's discretion there. Let's see. So the rules that kind of follow these, the rule of 3, which is the no more than 3 runes on an item, the rule of form is that the form has to follow the function. So, you know, you can't have a rune of might. Well, rune of might not be a good example, but you can't have the rune of swiftness on your talisman. You know, that might be appropriate for your sword. So it kind of needs to be the appropriate rune for an appropriate type of action or a piece of equipment. And lastly, is the rule of pride, which is where I was talking a little bit earlier, how you can never make that same item twice. It's, you're too proud to go back and double up on something. And that rule of pride actually has a couple of three rules within itself. So you never repeat your work. You can only ever engrave items of superior quality. A dwarf will never work with a human sword. They'll never work with a poor quality weapon. That is trash to them. They will only work on the best quality stuff. And then lastly, a rune item can never be bought or sold by a dwarf. So he can never make something fantastic and sell it for a fortune.
That raises some interesting questions. What do they do with a rune item they craft? Is it, do they give them away as a gift? Or?
I think gifts are probably the most appropriate. You know, you would you would make something of such fine beauty, because remember, anything that actually gets created in itself is a masterful piece of equipment, just because it's dwarf forged and worthy of the time and effort that was put into it. So these are the kind of things that you would be giving to you know, your guild masters, your somebody who saved your life, you know, so. More importantly, what that means is no character should ever be able to purchase a rune etched weapon in a store or anything. Maybe you'll find one, or if you do for some reason have an opportunity to buy one, it will never be from a dwarf. It would be one that some human at some point has found or stolen.
Yeah, I see. This is so opposite from Dungeons and Dragons, really, where everything can be purchased with a the right amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
And experience points.
You know, potentially you have a dwarf who's you know, kind of down on his luck and really against his own culture, but I think that kind of goes against the style of Warhammer dwarves.
Yeah, I think that would be a very special instance of somebody creating a character to play that, as opposed to making that like a rule, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So the game gives you about, I want to say it's 5 or 8 runes to start with, and then they give you a page of about 30 or 40 runes that are kind of all the runes that exist, and you almost kind of forms the dwarven language, it looks like. And so they don't have rules for all of those, but there are more runes than exist in the supplement, and it kind of gives the GM a little bit of leeway to create some custom runes. You know, there's the master rune of Gromrol. There's the master rune of Stromny Redbeard. You know, and it kind of puts them in categories of these belong on weapons, these belong on talismans, these are on armor, these are runes of protection, these are runes of engineering. You know, so the dwarves will put runes on their cannons, they'll put runes on their doors. You know, runes are everywhere in dwarven culture.
I see.
So the other cool part, the second new rule here is for the inventions. And dwarves in Warhammer are, they like to tinker and they like to invent new things. And they kind of have, if anybody, the kind of most steampunk style, where they, a lot of steam-powered mechanical objects, cannons, flamethrowers. They even have a primitive helicopter called a gyrocopter. So the dwarves have these inventor guilds or engineer guilds, and you know, often somebody is kicked out of a guild for trying to invent something crazy, only to be kind of reintroduced to the guild afterwards after they make it successful, or even, you know, after they've been killed by making their invention. You know, maybe they're even reintroduced after death just to kind of bring that invention back into the fold. Things like those were the gyrocopters and flamethrowers. So a dwarf engineer is encouraged to invent new things. And they call these things your inventions. And those things can be really anything. They don't have to be, you know, a telescope. It can be this ambiguous tool to improve life somehow. You know, somebody might invent the better shovel, while somebody else might invent a better hilt for an axe. You know, or however you want to do it. And the way that mechanically this works is they give you a talent card, and it's called an invention card, and it sockets onto engineers. And that talent card has a series of ways that it can modify something. So, for example, here's the one in the book here is called the ExoFrame. And what it does is it modifies your athletics checks. And then it has three open sockets to put things in. And these are the what your character has improved upon. This exoskeleton was added to, let's say, his armor. And the following slots are what benefits have been bestowed upon it through the use of the engineering skill. Now, there's a rank 1, 2, and 3, which easily correspond to the rank in your engineering skill, which brings me to this book, or this new book, introduces the new advanced skill for dwarves called Dwarven Engineering, which is an intelligence-based skill. So you can only do this inventing engineering skill if you've acquired this advanced skill. And what you'll do, the format that these little slots take is there's four options. You can have it reduce rolls by one purple die, add a white die, take away a black die, or add a yellow die. So of those four options, up to three of them can be slotted into this invention you've created, depending on how good you are. Now, you don't just get to pick them, though. What happens is when you try and create your invention, you try and, you know, affix this type of... You basically say, well, I'm going to try for the white die, or I'm going to try for the black die, or I'm going to try for the purple die. You'll spend your money and resources and equipment to and time to kind of create it, and you'll roll either an easy, difficult, hard, or daunting engineering check to see how well you succeed. And if you succeed, you get to slot that item in it.
Interesting. So what do the different... You say that you can slot things into that talent card. What do those represent?
So, like, let's say, for example... Let's say I've got an axe, and I'm a dwarven engineer, and I've got some widget attached to it that I think is going to improve the way it swings.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's my invention. Now, that invention has these three slots, and let's say I'm going to try, and of my four options, you know, the four difficulty levels essentially, the easiest being to add the fortune die. The second to be remove a misfortune die. The third hardest would be to add a expertise die. And the most difficult is to remove a purple die.
Oh, okay, that's
so. Yeah, and each of those go from the easy, average, hard, and daunting checks.
And
are those little cardboard cutouts? Yeah, those are part of your punch boards.
Oh, okay.
So there's these little, like, 1-inch by 1/2-inch punch outs with, like, a yellow, purple, white, or black, and a +1 or -1 next to it, and those kind of slot right in there. It's got a neat little image. It's a creative way to do it. It's a lot of components at that point, but, you know, I don't think you're not going to have tons of them out there at once, so it's pretty manageable.
Yeah,
but it's an interesting way to kind of introduce that mechanic, and it really encourages you to be creative and have some fun with what you're inventing.
Yeah, I really like that. It sounds awesome.
Yeah, it really does. In a way, is it similar to the rules you can find in Omens of War, where you can exchange dice for other effects and qualities?
It like does have some similarities.
It has some similarities, yes. And that's, I think, is very interesting because it removes the aspect of the game becoming too bloated, you know, with additional dice and rules. It actually works within the already existing rules. And I think that is a brilliant game design.
I can see a lot of interesting story mechanics or stories kind of coming about with inventions and runes and how valuable some of these things can be or how protective a dwarf wants to be about his inventions because he doesn't want anybody else stealing them. But one thing I forgot to mention about the inventions is that they also introduce or encourage a rule about your invention breaking. Your invention can actually break quite easily. The way in the rules example, a bane roll on could the GM can cash that in as your invention breaks, which is basically in my mind mean that's they're very delicate potentially. Now, that doesn't mean permanently broke. It just means you'll need to spend some time fixing it after combat. So mid-combat, your invention will likely not survive an entire combat. It may survive the first few rounds, and then it might break. So, you know, as an engineer, I would anticipate having my inventions break and repair them pretty regularly.
I see.
Thought that was an interesting mechanic.
Yes, excuse me. I have one question about the rules when it comes to creating inventions. And that is, will the rules hinder or inspire people to make all kinds of cool contraptions or ideas?
Think if you're playing a dwarf engineer, you're going to want to kind of come up with some cool ideas or have some fun with it. I don't recall if there's a limit to how many inventions you're allowed to have at once.
No.
And I would assume there isn't. There probably is a limit. I just don't know what it is.
Like, you could create a crossbow with a grappling hook and rope connected to it so that you could shoot it and, you know, climb up.
That sounds awesome.
Like, could you do that? Like, does it encourage
sure.
that? Or is it?
I think it keeps it very similar to the rest of the game mechanics. It keeps it very high level where it's like, you know, you are creating an invention which could be.
And, I mean,
whatever.
You have to note that down, right, though? You're going to have to write down, this is my invention. You don't, like, just get... It's on every athletics check or only, like, the
exo. Well, that was just the exoframe example. And there's a whole series of invention cards that kind of each fit a different role. So maybe that's... I just answered my own question there. These invention cards socket into your character sheet for an inventor. So the higher level inventors can actually maintain multiple inventions at once, while lower skilled inventors can only maintain or socket, you know, one at a time.
Are there rules to, like, increase the difficulty of your inventions breaking?
There was nothing on that except for the invention itself, which adds, removes white, black, purple, and yellow dice. So that in itself can help reduce the chance of something bad happening by reducing the negative effects that when it's interacted with. But no, nothing beyond that. So that I kind of anticipate some house rules maybe popping up, or maybe it's two banes, or maybe even a chaos star.
Yeah.
Something breaking like that.
Just depending on the rank of the inventor, I think, is how I would go about house ruling that. The higher the rank, the more the GM would have to cash in to break his inventions.
And that'll about wrap it up for this episode of the Reckless Dice Podcast. We'll be back in 2 weeks with our next episode. Be sure to comment on the site, recklessdice.com, or send us an email at recklessdice@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @recklessdice, as well as like us on Facebook, and give us a review on iTunes. Thanks for listening, and have a great night.
See you later, guys.